for the fans, by the fans. This is the Non-League Football Show with me, Tim Fuel, returning for another weekly look at the world of non-league football. And this week, without a co-host, I'm sure most of you have already seen that Dave Anderson is taking some gardening leave from the show to concentrate on his new role as assistant to old friend to this show, Simon Bassey at Barnet FC. We always knew the lure of the dugout was too much for him to hold off, and we'll wish them both good luck in their new role. So, bizarrely this week, I've got Dave Anderson as our first guest. I think the last time I did that, he just won the FA Vase and quite possibly had a few Peronis inside him too. Today, I think he's been on the training ground all day, so, but that doesn't mean he'll be any easier to understand, of course. Ironically, as Dave, the current managerial holder of the FA Vase, takes a seat on the bench, we welcome back the very same competition this season. There's still some third round games to play, and one of those managers involved is coming on to give us his thoughts and insights. A very talented coach who many won't necessarily know by name, but somebody who's gained many valuable years experience in non-league and higher levels as a coach. Plus, in a week when there's been more comings and goings in the non-league world at many levels, David Richardson joins me from the non-league paper to make sure we have it all covered. Much to discuss, so let's get matters underway. Now, as we usually discuss week in, week out, there's nought stranger than non-league football. And last week, we had Dave Anderson being the leading advocate for common sense. Now, this week, he's back in the dugout. I mean, it's a bittersweet moment, in a way, to welcome back to the Non-League Football Show my now estranged co-host, Mr. Dave Anderson. But, Dave, never say never.
Do you know what? All this time we've done the show together, and you picked the best introduction for me to last, because it is absolutely the truth. We were talking about common sense last week. Yeah, listen, a couple of things. You know, I've said to you, and people are aware that I'll be stepping away from the show, hopefully not forever, because you know I love it. I think it's the right thing for me personally. No one's asked me to do any of this, you know. No one said
you can't. Well, I know you're no good in the garden, so I've said that you're on gardening leave, but not really, because you're no good in the garden.
So, and Twitter, I've decided to sort of reduce massively because I just want to focus on what's happened. So, I suppose I better answer your question then. Well, listen, you've been aware that it's been bubbling on for a couple of weeks, and I've been involved in the discussions that were going on with Simon and that, and. It just came out of the blue really quickly. You know, Simon wasn't sure. He'd spoken to the chairman a few times and it had gone well. And we knew, you know, there was other people who had done well. And, you know, we spoke to them as well, if I'm being honest. And it just sort of came out of the blue where him and Simon sorted it out. And Simon phoned me and sort of said, he said to the chairman, like, I want to bring someone in with me to sort of help assist me and do the goalkeepers, and that was sorted within my part of it was sorted within, I'm going to say, an hour and a half. It was literally that quick, Tim, and that's why, in all honesty, I didn't get to tell you even, did I? I didn't get to sort of.
No, I found out through other methods, you know.
I know you're feeling jilted, aren't you? I can tell. I just tell. But that's sort of how it happened. So I've been in Wednesday, did my first session with the goalkeepers and the rest of the lads Wednesday, and today it's now Thursday evening. But I have to tell you this, you know, I was a bit apprehensive because it's been a while since I've worked with keepers and not been a manager, as you know. But I've absolutely loved it. I've loved every minute of it. I'm very fortunate. I've got people in high places who are goalkeepers and goalkeeping coaches, and Tony Roberts, who's Birmingham City and Wales national goalkeeping coach, has just sent me a load of stuff. I was looking at it before I came on today, like little sessions, just to give you a little bit of variation on what you're doing. Brilliant. I spoke to Mickey Payne today, the England seed coach, who rang me and said, hey, I'm just having a chat. He's a friend of the show, Mickey. I'm watching, you know, working with the goalkeepers, and then I'm not getting involved with the coaching of the first team. That Simon's been doing that. Bass has been sort of doing that, and but I've really enjoyed watching him work, and I've been in with it, and I'm sort of another pair of eyes behind him, and but it's been excellent. And I have to say, the lads, you know, the squad who have had a terrible run, and I don't want to go into that because that's not my business, you know, and I'm not here to sort of point the finger at previous regimes. That's not what I mean. But for a squad that's coming out of the sort of run they've been on, they've been good to work with. You know, the today was bright, and there was a buzz about it, and I liked it. And the session that the boss put on was really good. And obviously we're looking into the game on Saturday. So I actually went on Wednesday like a kid, his first day back at school. And
did you have a blazer that was too big for you?
Listen, there is nothing too big for me at the moment. I think I'm the problem getting kit for me. But I actually said to boss today, when we're in the office, he says, I need to thank you, boss. Well, should be sitting the gaffer, but the door was shut. So I need to thank you. I says, because that's the first day of football I've enjoyed for about 28 years, you know, because we know as managers you carry a different can. So that's how it is, Tim, and that's what it is. I have to say the facility is incredible, you know, and the people have been very welcoming. And yeah, now we've got to do the hard stuff, like start to sort of build a team and build a confidence and try and move it forward.
Yeah, we've obviously spoken with and about Simon Bassey many times on this show, and he's brought you in alongside him. Does that make you the old sensible head?
Well, I suppose that's probably the role it should be. Yes, I think. Look, I think in the situation he's at the period in his career where he's ready to be a manager. More than ready, you know, he's managed Wimbledon in League One as caretaker on a couple of occasions. But it's always nice to have someone beside you. And, you know, whilst he's managed a couple of times with Wimbledon, he's not experienced as a manager, but he's got everything. He's got everything. So it's just nice to have someone beside you, I suppose, with my experience, I'm guessing. But my role isn't just that. My role is to take the goalkeepers and deal with that side of it, which I've enjoyed, and sort of just be there with my opinions and how I see it. I think like any assistant, like any good assistant should do.
Right. Well, we spoke to Steve Bird, didn't we, recently up at Hereford? Coming from a similar point of view, he'd retired as well, and he did come in with someone that had worked with him as a player, and brought him in, and again he seemed to be enjoying football more than ever.
Oh, it is absolutely, because all you ever say, you know, I was kidding today. I've gone, it's brilliant, because my only answer to everything is the manager's office is over there, you know, and you know, wrap it before you go in. No, it's good. And you know, people keep taking the mickey out of me saying, oh, I thought you'd retired. I'd retired as a number one. I'll never be a number one again, you know. And if Simon Bassey resigns tomorrow, Dave Anderson ain't going to be Barnes manager. I'm sure they'll be delighted to hear that as well, by the way. But I'm retired as number one, but I'm really, really enjoying, it's only been 2 days, but I've really, really enjoyed the difference of it, you know.
Yeah, and in a way, many will see it as a bit of a free hit, with no relegation from the division this season, but the season that you're playing out anyway. But it's not as simple as that, really, is it? You've got to learn about the players very quickly, as you said. They've been on a terrible run, and you've got to pick them back up. They've got to be performing. You've got to build swiftly, I guess, for next season as well, and protect your own reputations in how you achieve that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's easy to say, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, it's irrelevant till the end of the season. You know, and I get people who would say that. I get that. But I think if you're within a football dressing room, you know, you've personal pride, you've confidence, you've got, you know, the team spirit, the whole soul of what the dressing room is has to be built on results and performance. And the fact that there is no relegation, you know, is, don't get me wrong, it's quite handy at the moment because of the league position. but you still have to try and build something. And, you know, supporters, Barnet supporters or any supporters, have great pride in their club and who they support. And, you know, we need to try and give them some of that pride back as quickly as we can. So to write it off the rest of this year and not worry about it until the summer, it is wrong. I think Simon's brought in a couple of signings today till the end of the season, and we're just trying to light the fire and a little bit of, you know, newness in the dressing room. And the guys, the reaction in the training has been really good. But yeah, look, we don't want to be sent to the Barnet supporters. Look, we'll give you some pride back. Come and see us in August. You know, don't get me wrong. You know, it might take the August. I sincerely hope not. But we just want them to watch the team and go, well, they're putting a shift in for us. I think every supporter I've ever worked for, no matter what the result is, if you're putting a shift in and you look like you're doing their badge justice, because it is theirs, it's their club, you know, we pass through it. But if you give it, do the badge justice and put a bit of sweat and tears into it, I think most supporters at most clubs, and I'm sure Barnet's the same, will give you a chance.
Yeah, so in a way, it's great timing, but also poor timing because the golf courses have all opened up as well and you're busier than ever.
And do you know what? I swear, I've been playing the best golf of my life as well. And I've actually had two of the lads at the golf course ring me, taking the mickey, it would have to be said, like along the lines of, Dave, is everything okay? Well, thank God you've answered the phone. Why, what's wrong? Well, you haven't been here for 2 days. We're desperate. She's about to phone the police to, you know, say, so I mean, I'm the mickey taking them. Obviously, they've read about Barnet and they're just having a joke, which is all good fun. So I'm hopeful that I might get a few holes in tomorrow after training and Sunday, you know, after first game in the National League. And I say I've worked at every level.
Well, National
yep. League down to Combine Counties. So.
And your opposition as well on Saturday, it couldn't be better, really, could it? The two old heads. I know we're under COVID restrictions, but I'm sure it might be a very long parting in the car park, whatever the result between the two of you.
I haven't seen Dev all in Devonshire for a while, and I've come up against him many times, as you know. It has to be said, my record against him isn't great, but it's not my record, it's Simon's tomorrow, so I'm in the background. But yeah, it'd be nice to see Dev and you know, I've bumped into a couple of people that I've known already, and, you know, obviously we've been around 100 years, haven't we? So you're going to know people. But yeah, it'd be nice to see Dev and see how he is, and hopefully take something off him. So let's not be, you know, let's not kid ourselves about this. Hopefully take something away.
Well, Dave, it's great to have you back on, and I'm sure we will have you back on at some stage and speak again and keep up to date with all the progress. But best of luck to you.
And what I would say is, you know, just admit, this is the only interview I'm doing, okay, before you start. I'm not doing any other interviews, okay? So you got it, you know, for what it's worth. And in a couple of weeks, I'll make sure it passes. When he gets time, comes on as well. Okay.
Well, as I said to you before we came on air, there's already plenty of people knocking on our door here as well. So you know, they'll keep the seat warm, but you know,
make forever.
Dave Anderson, thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show.
It's my absolute pleasure, Tim.
So, as I mentioned earlier, the FA Vars gets back underway this weekend with 4 matches in the third round proper. From here on in, it's around every week too, all the way up to the semis. And for many, the only competitive football they have to look forward to. These three clubs have been unable to get competitive games under their belts since lockdown began at the start of the year. And even training as a unit hasn't been possible at this level until recent days. So that hasn't stopped our next guest, though, getting his players ready. To tell us more, it's a warm welcome to the Non-League Football Show to Guildford City manager Paul Barnes.
Very nice to be with you. Thank you for having me.
It's good to get you on, Paul. We sort of missed out last year when you're having such a great time at Staines. But let's start. I said training hasn't been possible as a unit, but I know you've been leading the way in sort of staying within lockdown rules, but working hard with your players and building that professional approach to football amongst your non-league players.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we were just discussing before, obviously we've come on about using the time to our advantage, and that's exactly what we've done at Guildford City. And I mean, it's what attracted me to the project. It was having good people behind the scenes that want to be forward thinking, want to push the standards of obviously non-league football, doesn't matter which level you're at. And so that's exactly what we've done. We've managed to use different online tools. Obviously, we've done many a Zoom session. I'm lucky enough to have some very good friends and contacts around the game that have supported us as well. So, I mean, yeah, we've really used the time to our advantage, and we've been lucky that we've tried to build good relationships and set standards really high from day one. And players have kind of bought into it and seen what we're trying to do. So we've had many a one-to-one session and sticking with, obviously, the social distancing guidelines, and managed to just try to work a manageable way to support players through a tough time.
Yeah, we've spoken to lots of managers that, you know, getting their players to do Strava and various online things and that. But I think you've taken it to the next level. You were doing these literal one-to-one personal training sessions, which I guess, as you coming in as a new gaffer at the start of the year, it gave you an opportunity as well to sort of get to know these players a bit better as well.
Yeah, and you know what it's like, obviously, working with players on a part-time basis, it's very hard to build relationships. So, I mean, we're always trying to be proactive, myself and my staff. You know, it's not just me. We've managed to bring in some good people, obviously, to support me as part of my management team. So everybody's kind of coming from the same point of view, where we believe that, you know, producing and helping good people will help to be good players. So, I mean, that's exactly our ethos and what we've tried to do to show that we're willing to go above and beyond for the people that are going to be representing us as players.
Yeah, and you mentioned, yeah, the team around you there. It's good to see you've got a good backing from the board, as you say. And you know, there's names there. You know, David Knight, known for his time at Basingstoke Town on the Isthmian board, the Southern League board. You've got Barry Underwood MBE, as he now is. You know, who's got experience from London Broncos to Aldershot Town, and now I think nearly a decade at Guildford. And it's that additional experience which I think helps when you say you've come into a project. I think that helps, that thinking outside the box, that non-league's a very different beast as it was from what it was 10 years ago.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's again, what attracted me. And no disrespect to maybe some of the other places that I've had the privilege to work with before. But as a younger manager making his way in the game, I think it was important to surround myself with people with some great experience, as you just alluded to. And also being able to help me grow as a manager and as a person. Because, I mean, there's some other people as well behind the scenes that are involved in the club that have got some great experience, not just within the football industry, but I think in the business industry now, and there's so much crossover, and it allows me to obviously make myself a better manager and a better person, both on and off the pitch.
Yeah, and Guildford City, yeah, a great non-league name, but obviously as a reformed club, so there's probably a lot of anticipation as well as to where the club can go. And is that part of that project feeling that you wanted to be part of?
Yeah, definitely. And I think someone did just remind me this week at training when they were talking to somebody else who's within the non-league pyramid as a supporter. And they said, oh, yeah, I'm really excited to have Paul here. Doesn't stay anywhere too long, though. And I think, you know, because you're never really given a chance to kind of just tell your story. But I think it's not the case of having an opportunity to stay somewhere too long or not wanting to stay there. I think it's the club and the project's got to align with what you want to do as a manager and myself as a person. So they've got to have the same values as people. And then they've got to be wanting to grow the club. And I see it as a whole club and community initiative. I don't see it as just the first team one. I mean, we've already done lots of work with the different youth teams within the club as well through lockdown. So we're trying to already show that whatever we're going to be doing within the first team, we want to replicate that all the way through the club and allow all of the youth teams to get exposure to what we're doing, and, you know, such as video analysis, you know, strength and conditioning, all those things that they will get access to in a professional football club. So that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, it's a bit unfair to make that comment that you hop about all over. I, there, I, 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 you're somebody that I certainly know of and have watched your career build. But for those that don't know, I mean, just explain some of the experience you've got in non-league from your time at Welling, Margate, Guildford, Greenwich Borough, you know, even further afield away from non-league football.
Yeah, no, so I've been involved now for just, I think it's coming up for 20 years, maybe just under 20 years. I've lost track. I got into it really young. Obviously, like most, realised trying to be an aspiring player myself, it wasn't going to materialise. And it was kind of a fortunate trip out to the States that kind of set the fire burning inside of me for the coaching. I came back, was lucky enough to get a part-time role at my local boyhood club, which was Chelsea Football Club. And it grew from there, to be honest. Obviously, I built myself up. I got more and more experience. I got opportunities to get involved. I was very lucky. Obviously, I work for an independent school now. I got involved and then it grew from there. And lucky enough that along the way, obviously, I worked in academies. And then I always set out that I wanted to be involved in just youth development football. But it was when the Welling job come up, you know, many years back now. And, you know, not many people my age, I think I was only 31 at the time, that your first role would be an assistant manager stroke first team coach in the conference. And I loved it. You know, we went in when I was with Louis and Matt, they invited me to be part of their management team. And I really enjoyed that kind of the pressure of playing for 3 points. But also I think what you don't appreciate is you always think the level is going to be, you know, way too high or you might be at your depth because I wasn't obviously a player. I didn't play as a pro. But I've coached for a long time. But I think that's what people don't appreciate, that, you know, spending the last 15 years or whatever it was before I went into that, that kind of equipped me really well to go in and work with senior players, because the detail that we was working at, building personable relationships with players and going into the fine detail, talking about opposition. And it was quite fascinating that a lot of senior players within the conference kind of said that we didn't really get that detail of coaching before, which was, for me, was nice because it was just what I would think would be a given. And it allowed me to build my reputation there and then go on. And as you say, obviously, I was lucky enough to then become Mickey Ball's assistant at Margate. And then obviously it carried on from there, you know, going to Ashford United. Obviously, after I took a little bit of time out, I wasn't due to be involved that year. You know, I set up a complete player performance, which is obviously a business that I set up to support senior players in non-league football that have maybe dropped out of professional football, to give them support they need, because I don't think there's enough support around the game. And then obviously Ashford come knocking, and it, you know, I love my time at Ashford. It was a great club, really, you know, supporters were brilliant. And then not too long after, we just started turning things around at Ashford. I was lucky enough to get a phone call from the chairman at Greenwich Borough. And for me, obviously, I always wanted to be my own man and stand on my own 2 feet as a manager. So I thought the opportunity was too good to turn down. Obviously, at the time, the club had a great reputation. Obviously, had a really, really good playing squad, even though it was somewhat depleted from, obviously, when Gary then moved on and the budget went. But I was confident I could still go and do a job. And I like to think that I did enhance my reputation from going there. And we did, obviously, we did reach the objectives, which was to make the playoffs, which we did. And unfortunately, the worst performance that the boys put in for me was in the playoff semi-final when we got bashed by Caribbean Casuals. But again, we still achieved what we set out to do. And as with the budget being cut and, you know, I think touching on it earlier about the club not being maybe as well structured as you would be led to believe, because everyone knew Greenwich Borough was a great club. But when I took over, you know, I thought that they'd have everything, you know, I thought they'd have a training ground at their disposal. I thought that there'd be lots of staff wanting to help around. And it was the complete opposite. I mean, I went in and I was given a bunch of keys and a scrap bit of A4 paper and said, away you go. So, you know, and that's the reality of non-league football. But I mean, we had to make sure we managed the budget. So I actually had to kind of move players around so I could then hire a training facility, because obviously my strength lies in my coaching. And we actually released the player so I could bring in a performance analysis as well, so we could start delivering some video analysis. So for me, the trade-off was maybe sacrificing one or two players to maybe benefit the other 15 or 16 that we had. And that goes back to obviously my coaching background. And it worked well for us. Like I said, we achieved our objectives. And then obviously what developed there within Greenwich Borough is probably for another book at another time and another day.
I think that's one of those Hollywood movies I speak about time and time again.
100%. So things didn't pan out. I moved on, and again, I just concentrated. Obviously, me and my partner, we were just in a time of our lives where we were looking to have our little girl, touch wood. Obviously, she'd come along, and you know, we were blessed, and it was just taking some time out. So I wasn't really looking for anything, and then Staines come about, and it was, I think it's because everybody told me not to go anywhere near it, because they were struggling. You know, obviously they was at the foot of the table on a terrible run, had been through a few managers in that time period, all sorts of troubles off the field, and I think that's what it was. I mean, I probably must have spoke to about 50 different contacts around the game, and everyone said, don't do it, Paul, just stay away from it, wait until the summer, you'll get a job, obviously you've got good stock. You'll get a job and you have another crack in the summer. And I thought, you know what, it's because people said you couldn't do it. It pushed me into making a decision that thinking, you know, I'm going to take it. And I will show people that maybe, you know, it's not impossible. You know, as luck would have it, COVID struck and the season got curtailed. I mean, I remain adamant to the day that we still would have stayed up. I believe, you know, I think we recruited, we released 14 and brought in 15 within 2 weeks of being there. So it shows, again, my reputation with players around the game. Boys were willing to come in and just play for us because they know the way we work. But obviously, we didn't get a chance to play it out. But what it did give us is a chance to restart again, have a full pre-season, and then go again with Staines for the beginning of this season. And I mean, again, we recruited really young. We went for some talented boys that I've known for a long time that have played around the levels that maybe not had the luck or maybe not got the support that they needed. So we thought we had a really good mix of talented boys that we believe could have pushed on, and not just for the club, I believe, because I always say to players that it's not just about what you can do for the club, it's what we can do for you as players and help you in your journey. And the boys bought into that, and it was brilliant because I think the table didn't lie, you know, the performances we put in and the kind of football we played, that's what I took great pride in. And we was exciting to watch, obviously goal difference, maybe anybody who wants to just shut up shop and go for a clean sheet. Maybe we didn't want to come down and watch us, but it was always entertaining. And I believe we got a good buzz around the club again. Fans started to come back and it was a really nice feeling there. It's just obviously with lockdown happening and then things off the pitch, things transpired. And I just took stock myself and thought for the new year, I want to be certain in such an uncertain time. I want to be certain of what we're doing is for the right reasons. And it just so happens that Guildford obviously come about, and the ideas that they had was a great fit for me. And again, you know, that all fits in the wonderful world of non-league. For most people, you've got to fit in around a full-time job, and that's exactly what we do. But we don't grumble. I'm very fortunate that I work as, you know, a member of an independent school. So I'm a director of football as my full-time role. So I'm football 24/7. My partner, she doesn't like it, but she, I mean, when we're at home, kind of, I try to have my family time and switch off from football. It rarely happens, but I make sure that obviously we get quality time as a family. Because, like I say to everybody that plays for us or works with us, members of staff, I think it's important that as well. You know, it's always about your family first. Everything that we do is about the people that we're trying to be and the lives that we're trying to create for the loved ones that we're lucky enough to have with us still. So, I mean, that's what we try to do. I make sure we get quality time, but she knows, unfortunately, that I'm lost to the game majority of the time.
I think that's fairly standard with most of the managers. Yeah, normally I'd be joined alongside me by Dave Anderson, who's had, nearly 2 years sat on the sideline. It was too much for him. He's had to go back into that dugout. I mean, that was a great example of your CV and your knowledge, your understanding of the game, both at this level and beyond. And one thing I like is that experience beyond, although you say you're 24/7 football, it's different types of football. And I think that's where non-league is changing. It's moving on. We're learning from other sports, football at a higher level. It's good to see that you've got the back in there at Guildford. You've got a pretty full backroom staff, which in years gone by, you might have been lucky to have an assistant manager and maybe someone that carried a bucket and a sponge. But these additional sort of therapists and analysts are so vital to make sure that the players can get the best out of themselves.
Yeah, no, 100%. I place, you know, a big emphasis on creating the right environment And even for me, as I alluded to earlier, I believe, you know, all your money doesn't have to go into a playing squad, and it shouldn't, because, you know, it's about creating the right environment for the players that are going to be part of your playing squad that give them the best chance to perform. And again, you know, our job in non-league football, my role as a manager in non-league football, it's to bring success to my club. But again, what's got to work hand in hand is making sure that the players that are going to come and work with us, they know that they're going to get our full support in terms of their development and their own journey. So it's making sure that, you know, we give equal responsibility and time to both. And I do believe that you can. You know, I don't believe you just can focus on one thing and, you know, you might maybe disregard the player's development. I believe you can do both. And, you know, again, with my background in terms of my full-time role, obviously in education, it's different ways of learning. You know, the Cowleys are a great example of turning from school teachers to full-time football managers, and they've done brilliant. And I believe the reason why they do it is because they prioritise, obviously, those different areas. It's about managing people as well, having that empathy as people, because, again, you're a leader, but you can lead in different ways. It's not, again, you know, when I was a kid, it was about screaming and shouting to get a reaction off somebody. And I kind of, my coaching journey always comes from wanting to do the complete opposite of how I was coached as a kid. It was about talking to players, finding out how you can problem solve together, finding out maybe what's going on in their personal situations. So you can maybe go above and beyond. And because you know, and it's the same in normal life, if somebody goes above and beyond for me, I'll go that extra step further for them. And I think we've seen that with the players that we work with. And that's, you know, not just within a non-league football environment. That's, you know, from the other aspects of what we do in terms of complete player performance. You know, I'll get players from every level of the game call us up, you know, just to have a chat, talk about maybe a potential of a move, say, is it a good, do you think it's a good decision to go to this club? You know, what's this manager like? And we just try to give honest advice. Obviously, we're not agents or anything like that. But what we try to be that support for players, because sometimes, as I said earlier, I don't think there is enough support. So being able to bring in professionals from different fields, I mean, I've managed to get this year already, looking not just for the rest of this season, but beyond at Guildford. I mean, I've brought on somebody who's been out of the game for a little bit of time, so I hope he won't mind me saying. So Benson Mayuba, he played, was out the game for a long time, missed it. His background now is in the fitness industry, so he runs his own personal fitness company, but then also he's got a mindset coaching aspect of his delivery. So for me, it was a no-brainer. Not only did we get on really well as people, but talking about his love for the game and being able to bring in his expertise from a fitness point of view, but then also me being able to maybe have the idea of coupling that with his mindset coaching, so we can actually support players, not just physically, but psychologically, because it's a part of the game. And you see it now through social media that there's probably not enough education, not enough focus on that part. And let's have it right. That's a big part of why people perform.
Yeah. And I think people disregard the fact that at non-league level, as a manager, you might get those lads, you know, once, twice, maybe three times if you're lucky a week. And then you have to make that decision as to, do you spend some more time talking to them, just checking they're okay, making sure that their life away from football is good to get the best out of them, or do you work on some set pieces? And it's a constant juggle, I guess.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, one of my famous stories that I always say to players, and I don't do it to get anyone to sign for us, but I just try to give them an insight of how we think and how we may be thinking a little bit differently. Obviously, I'm proud of being a working class lad from inner city London, you know, growing up in a single parent family in a time when everyone always said that, you know, if you was from a single parent family, you had less chance of making it out or you would get into extra trouble. And I like to think that we went against the grain, and, you know, I've been fairly successful with my own career and as a person, but I can relate. So growing up in a council estate in central London, I can relate to a lot of the lads that we work with. And I think that they're taken aback quite often that myself and my staff, because we're all from similar backgrounds, is that we've got empathy as, you know, young men growing up from those hard-hitting backgrounds. You can relate, you know, times when friends may be getting into trouble, when you lived the same kind of lives, you know, you traveled similar journeys, so you can relate to it. And so when I think they see that you can be that personable, they then start to open up. And then that's when you start to really build strong relationships, and then you get more out of them as people. And I think, you know, going back to the famous story, I'd happily, if I knew a player, you know, had a tough time of it, you know, mum at home, he's got his little brother and sister, and I'd happily say to a player, look, I believe, because of your personal circumstances, if we can give you a little bit of extra per week and it helps, you know, keep the lights on at home, put some more food and milk in the fridge. You know, if that takes the responsibility off of you having to work another shift in your job because you're concentrating on trying to work your way out through the ladder, you know, that's our responsibility to you as people. And so we place a big emphasis on the personal side of things. And I know it might not be for everybody, and I'm sometimes pulled up on it, and they say maybe you're too soft, or, you know, you care too much. But I don't believe you can be. I think the world needs more people that take great pride and care in the people they're working with.
Empathy for me is a very important word, and I've got written down here as well, from talking to others that know you, that the big thing they mention is your people skills. You know, the coaching second to none, your football knowledge equally as well, but it's the man management and the ability to connect with people that seems to make you stand out from the rest. And that's people that have come into contact with you on a one-off, on a daily basis, and that sort of thing. And I think that's a vital part of your success, and I'm sure it's been a big part of being able to get through this COVID period as well.
No. And, you know, I take it as a huge compliment. And I say to players, I mean, I was doing some one-to-ones this morning, and I say to players, you're your own best salesman, and you're the only one that can enhance your reputation. I take great pride in the person that I am on and off the pitch, you know, away from football. And I say to people, I think the best thing you can be is consistent. And so I try to live by those rules and just be consistent with everybody. So, you know, if it's somebody that I've met once, I try to treat them exactly the same as somebody I've known for 10 years. If it's a player that just, and I try to go back to every player that messages me or reaches out on social media, and they'll just ask a question, because I believe, you know, you never know what might happen in 10 years' time. They could be this big star. You could be working in the game higher up the chat, and they might end up being your player. So I believe, you know, if you're consistent and you're willing to give people time, and for me it's all about being a good person, because you talk about, and I know I do get deep, sorry Tim,
I do go deep this is where we share the ideals, and hopefully I think a lot of our audience do as well, because I think it's one of the reasons why we love non-league football, because it's more personable.
Yeah, oh, 100%. And I'm not being funny, you know. With the time that we get and the opportunities we get, it's about making an impact. You know, people, they throw around, I think ever since the Olympics, people throw around legacy. But I say to people every time, you know, you're your own legacy. So I say to, if somebody meets me for 5 minutes and that's the only time that they ever met me, if they can go away and speak well of me now for that 5 minutes, for the rest of their time, brilliant, you know. And that's, you know, it's not trying to win favour with everybody, but it's that consistent of being a good person, holding, you know, your values true to yourself and everybody else out there, and just treating everyone with the same respect. I mean, I had a gentleman last night when we was training down at the Spectrum, first time one of the volunteers at the club, and he actually just turned around and said, Paul, I've been struggling through the lockdown period. I need to do some exercise. Is there anything you could do to help me? I said, I'll send you some of our runs that we do with the boys. He said, oh, yeah. He said, I might not be as quick. And just by, you know, sending him some of the practices that we do with the boys, I know that would mean the world to him. You know, and it's only taking me a five-minute conversation and then sending a message. So it's an
important message as well, because I was on a Zoom call a few weeks back now with Jason Roberts, Nathan Ellington, Jamie Mackey, DJ Campbell, guys that had been at non-league level and then made that step up to the Premier League. And each and every one of them had a mentor, someone that was their go-to person, that was just there for advice, that just sort of understood them and got them. And each of them said that was the big factor in them making it up to that top level.
Yeah, no. I think it's so important, because you know what it's like as well in life. As you grow as well, it's hard. Who do you trust? Who are your true friends? So if you have got that one person that you can always call on and know, you know, that will be honest with you and tell you sometimes not what you want to hear, but what you need to hear. And I think that's, you know, by being honest and being true to yourself and your values and true to the people that you're working with, I think you can't go wrong.
Well, there's a whole separate podcast that we could be doing here, but I obviously we need to talk FA Vards. You know, onto this weekend's game. It's a you've almost got like a single game season ahead of you now, week to week from here on in on competitive front. Have you been able to get any training games in ahead of this weekend?
So we managed to arrange a friendly last Saturday. We played Red Hill. The guys at Red Hill were brilliant by accommodating us and getting us the game. It's been such a frantic time and trying to squeeze so much in, even though we had the time in terms of lockdown, but obviously doing one-to-ones and doing the online stuff, there's only so much you can do. Trying to get an idea of who fits, because I've got a certain way that I want to play. We've got a system that we're introducing to the whole club. So normally you would be able to recruit if you're coming in and it's fresh, and you would recruit to fit your system and the way you want to play. Unfortunately, obviously, we haven't got that time at the moment, and I've inherited a group of players. And I always said my first kind of few days in the job, I made sure I rang around everybody and just to introduce myself and say, look, you'll get a fair crack to show what you're all about. And then it's up to me as the manager to make a decision whether you will fit or you won't. But we're having an honest conversation. So that's where we are now. Obviously, we would have liked to be doing that in January, but without having the opportunity to play a game. So we're doing that now. You know, the lads have worked, to be fair. There's been six or seven senior boys that have just fell by the wayside because they've proven that they're maybe not going to be to the standard that we want people to work at. But we've probably kept about 50% of the squad. What we have done as well, we've promoted from within. So I've taken probably about 9 or 10 18s and 23s with me. And they will be involved this weekend. And I'm happy to give youth a chance. I'm happy to see what the senior boys are all about and see how they look after the youth as well as perform. And so we've managed to get out. We've trained. I'm trying to think. So last night was probably our fourth session we got in. We was lucky enough. So we trained bank holiday Monday. I didn't know if the lads thanked me for that one or not. I do think obviously everyone was just happy to get out and train. So we had a really good session Monday morning. Boys have worked. They've taken on the ideas. In training, it's a different ball game though, as I said to them last night. When it comes to a competitive game like Saturday and there's something to play for, you find out, you know, who's got what's needed to be stand up and be counted to help us get through to the next round, which it's all about.
And interestingly, I mean, you're struggling really to understand your own team, but Wharton and Hersham, your opposition, do you even know who's in their squad?
To be honest, I mean, I'm a bit of a geek, so I do my homework, and I think being a manager, I think you've got to keep up to date and be well informed of players from all different levels and all different divisions. So I try to inform myself as best as I can. I do know a few of the boys that played down there. I know, obviously, they were part of the Wharton Casual side. I know a couple of players that were at Corinthian Casual. So they've done really well in terms of recruitment. I know off the pitch, they're moving in the right direction, rebuilding the club up again. They've got a good young manager who's making his way in the game as well. So I think they're doing everything right. I think on paper, and I did say, I'd done an article the other day, and they, you know, even though we're in the league above, you would expect us to be favourites. But again, in the times of transition and how well they were going, how not very well we were going in terms of the league, you would maybe say Wharton were maybe the favourites. But again, it's a one-off, you know, with the period that we've had off. It's anybody's game on the day. It's about who turns up.
Yeah, and it's a one-off. It's a big game. I guess it's your first game in charge, so it makes it a big game anyway. But I sense it is all about the longer journey and just that this is another step in it. You spoke about the project. How far can the club go with you at the helm?
So, I mean, we've got a plan over the next few years, and I'm happy to be part of that. We've got, obviously, as I said, I think the club will be making some announcements within the next few months of a new restructure. I don't know how much I can say, to be fair, but there'll be lots of things happening. And again, you know, going back to me accepting a job, it wasn't, and I know there'd be some raised eyebrows, it was, how's Barnsley ended up down there? And I don't do anything just off the cuff. Everything's thought through. So I did my research, obviously going back to the 70s when there was a conference side, you know, years to get 1,000 people down watching Guildford City play. So, you know, I knew that it was kind of a sleeping giant. We played them in the FA Cup this year as well, and they brought over 150 fans to us at Staines. It was our biggest crowd of the season at Staines, and that's because Guildford has such a great support. And so that stuck with me as well. That stuck in my head, what a great support they had. And so when I kind of got speaking to everybody behind the scenes, they told me of the plans, and it's something that just fits with me. Anybody that knows me knows that I'm about something bigger than just myself. If I can have that impact, and if I'm allowed to play an integral part in building something. I love playing a part in building projects. And again, it's about more than just yourself. You know, it's about, you know, the 25 youth teams that we got coming through, giving them something to aspire to. Because if we can get the success that we want on the pitch, and the plan will be to go promotion next season, and then we can raise the standard so we become a step four side, and then look to go again potentially in the next year or two. That's the plan at Guildford. And again, it's not just on the pitch. I think it's off the pitch as well, because like I said, we're putting everything in place to create a professional environment. The club are supporting us in terms of training facilities, giving us access to all the kind of resources that we've asked for as well. So kind of I'm in probably one of the best environments that I've actually had access to since I've been involved in non-league, which might sound crazy because it's the lowest level that I've ever worked in. But sometimes, and I do try to get it through to players, sometimes it's about finding the right fit, the right people, because it may be taking a step back in terms of level. But then as we've seen from lots of players, that they may be play at one level down for a year, but then they go and get 30, 40, 50 goals, and then all of a sudden they get a move into the Football League. And for me, it's similar, and it's being able to be part of something that is bigger than just, and again, I'll go back to that support with the next 6 months, because I'm going to be here longer than that.
Well, I think in the next couple of years, the past couple of years that we've had is going to have an impact on the pyramid and sort of the levelling up even across the steps, because, you know, clubs are in different financial situations, you know, even the number of volunteers that clubs have got around, it's so essential going forward. And I do keep banging this drum that as much as we're all fans and we don't want to lose that magic of non-league, clubs need to be run as a business, and non-league is a business now, and we need to look at it from that point of view.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, I had a conversation with somebody earlier, and it's, I think as a manager now, you've got to appreciate that. And like I said, going to the reasons why I joined, and I believe the people behind the scenes at Guildford could help me grow as a manager, is you've got to pay close attention to that business model that the club's operating under. And again, how can you impact that? So, you know, we're talking about growing the club in different ways, you know, increasing participation. So something like a women's team to come on, increasing women's and girls football within the football club, helping the community grow in different ways. So I think, again, yourself as a manager, because you're the face of the club, and granted, yep, you've got to take the rough with the smooth. So when you win and when you lose, but your job is not just driving the first team on the pitch, it's driving the club off the pitch as well. So it's making sure you've got a good relationship with those people that are helping put everything in place. And you've got an important part to play. So from a business side of things, I think you've got to be willing to develop yourself in a business sense as well for your club to grow.
Yeah. Well, Paul Barnes, I better let you go, because you've probably got some preparation to do for this big game in the FA Vars at the weekend. It's been great to get you on the Non-League Football Show. I'm sure we'll speak again soon, but thank you for your time.
Thank you ever so much, Tim. Stay safe.
So it's the time of week then to head on over to virtual and non-league paper towers. A return to the show for senior writer there, Mr. David Richardson. Welcome back, David.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
Good. We've got Easter behind us already now. And well, the biggest news of the week, I guess, coming out of the National League just after Easter, that Brian Barwick is two-step down as the league chairman come the end of the season.
Yeah, that's right. He spoke how difficult the sort of last 12 months have been, even with all of his experience in football and sport in general. Sort of the changing of the guard continues a little bit with Michael Tassel's sudden departure in December. Jim Parmenter stepped down from the board. There's been couple of others in sort of non-executive positions from the board step down. So there's, I suppose, like I say, a bit of a changing of the guard, but, the clubs are trying to force through this EGM where this motion of no confidence will be raised there. They say they have 17 clubs in support of having that EGM. It remains to be seen a little bit as to whether that's enough for the meeting to go through, because there's some complexities on the number of clubs that you would need and the balance of the votes of National League clubs at step one and those at step two. So I think there's a bit of confirming to do in the next sort of 48 hours or so as to what happens with that. So we'll see whether that meeting comes about. But no, certainly another big change for the National League in Brian Barwick going.
Yeah, something I think I stated last week. Yeah, they're going to need an EGM anyway, whether the clubs call it or not, because there's still so many loose ends that need to be tied up before the AGM, which would take place in June, I guess, by the time, maybe later in June than normal, by the time the season's finished. So I don't think there's any doubt there's going to be an EGM. It's going to be, is there going to be a vote of no confidence and how that's going to play out. But I think the wider picture is, again, the National League now needs a chairman. They know that they're going to need a chairman come the start of next season. But if you're looking outwards, if you're on the outside looking inwards, it's a very difficult... we talk about managers. Do they want to move to this club because it's so complicated? The year that the National League's had, there may be a number of people that would be very good for the role but might be put off for it.
Yeah, potentially. I think we sort of almost said that with Mark Ives going into the National League. Really, it was, it was taking on a sort of really big role at that time and at the start of the year, taking that on and obviously the sort of problems, I guess, and issues and talking points that he was sort of walking into. And yeah, I suppose it's a little bit of a similar situation with that. Obviously, by the time a new chairman comes in, the season will be over and things will have sort of largely moved on, but there will still be those things that clubs will probably raise in the EGM and other sort of things that they want clarity on. So there's still sort of questions to be answered, really. It'd be interesting to see how the appointment of the new chairman comes about and sort of how that process is done. Obviously, the chairman, works for the sort of National League Board in a sense, sort of that, the National League Board, discuss these things and sort of the chairman sort of acts and Mark Ives' role sort of acts on what sort of the National League Board wants or sort of agrees. So, yeah, interesting to see what happens with that. I mean, I've said it a lot, haven't we, over the last 12 months about how we don't envy sort of these people who are in charge of leagues and things at this time and sort of trying to plan. And I think sort of, particularly for the National League and sort of the, whether you agree or not, sort of the issues that they've had over the last 12 months, it's certainly probably sort of not a position I'd be jumping straight into.
And we're recording this late Thursday afternoon. I think there was a board meeting of the National League today. There may be something that comes out from that, and I'm sure that'll be reported in this weekend's paper. But as you say, there are so many questions that remain unanswered, and I think we're probably a number of weeks away from them being answered as well. One thing we did learn this week, as one man leaves a number of others secure their position and others arrive, so it was nice to see, particularly on the back of your great article over the weekend, nice to see Matt Gray and Jason Goodliffe rewarded by Sutton United with increased contracts on a great season so far, promotion aspirations surely, and it's good to see a young management team that have been given a bit of time to breathe, prove themselves, and then get the support that they deserve, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Probably not sort of really a massive surprise to see the contracts have been extended, really. I mean, why wouldn't Sutton want to keep them? But, nonetheless, great for them to have that security. Of course, it wasn't sort of all that long ago that when Matt Gray sort of first took over from Paul Doswell, which was clearly going to be a difficult thing to take on. Paul Doswell having been such a driving force at Sutton for so long. And they had a sort of a bit of a sticky start in that first season. And, I think it was maybe one win in 14 or something like that. And you kind of wondered, well, it's not going great, but, Sutton stuck by them. And to be honest, I would expect that from a club like Sutton, who are always very sensible in the way they go about things. They stuck by him and didn't panic, and they finished last season really strongly. It would have been interesting to see where they would have ended up had the season played out. And then they've just quite literally just sort of carried it into this season, really. The squad is sort of largely the same from last year, although they've made some good additions. I really like Isaac Olafe up front. He's on loan from Millwall. He's been scoring goals. Matt Gray's, although it's his first job in management, as a manager, he's obviously sort of, more than done his sort of work experience and the hard yards sort of as an assistant at this level and higher as well. Now testing himself as a manager, he's really sort of taken well to the job, really. So, great for them to be rewarded by such as that. Hopefully it's not any sort of kiss of death or things like that, as we sort of see with Manager of the Month awards. I'm sure it won't be. Great for those two. And, who knows, it might well not be long until they're Football League managers with Sutton, perhaps.
Yeah, and of course, we spoke of our own Dave Anderson earlier with his move back to the dugout alongside Simon Batty at Barnet. I guess that the big thing they'll be hoping for is that the revolving door's been changed on the manager's room at the Hive.
Yeah, it hasn't been certainly probably for the last 10 years, I don't think, but the number of managers they've gone through, is really sort of quite remarkable. Simon Maston, Dave Anderson, the sort of third permanent appointment following Peter Beadle and Tim Flowers. Obviously, then Paul Fairclough took the reins on an interim basis for three games to try and sort of steady things. Now they've gone in there. So, an interesting one to see what they can do. Obviously, Barnet having sort of such a tough time this season, but at the same time, there's not that threat of relegation. So, you can kind of almost sort of understand it from a player's point of view when you're probably getting battered every week, but then at the same point in time you're kind of thinking, well, what am I playing for? I guess, what they'll probably try and go in there and say is that, you're playing for contracts for next season, and if you want to be here or even at another club to try and pick you up, you've got to start turning in some performances to show your worth, really. A difficult job there for Barnet. I think they've only got 13 points from the games they've played so far this season. I was looking back at the history records this week, actually, to see what the records were for teams with the lowest number of points. They've surpassed Hyde from a few years ago. But, it's looking quite bleak in terms of coming in second place for that record. But, we'll see what they can do at Barnet, and surely they've got to start looking at putting some foundations in for next season.
Yeah, we speak about clubs, on and off the field. It needs to be a great balance. It does look like off the field they've got a balance of the commercial side of the thing. They just need to get that on the field stuff settled. I've alluded to the point that there may be something else coming out of the National League. Who knows, ahead of the weekend. But we do have a National League programme that you'll be reporting on. But what else can we expect to read in this weekend's paper?
Yeah, all the National League matches as usual. I'm going to Bromley against Dagenham. Bromley have had a pretty solid start under Andy Woodman. Since Neil Smith's departure. So we've got all those games covered. There's also FA Vars action as well, the remaining third round ties. The FA Vars back starting up again this week at that third round stage. And then obviously fourth round and the rounds continue from next weekend as well. So yeah, good to see that competition starting up again. Obviously no fans allowed back yet to watch those matches, fans coming back in from the middle of May, but still, at least for those clubs, the Wembley dream, however distant it may be at the third round stage, is still alive. And I think probably when that's only the only games you're playing, really, probably for a little while before next season, that's quite a big carrot to have. So we've got those ties covered as well. I spoke to Pete Wild at Halifax this week. He's been doing an another good job there in his second season. Obviously, got the club into the playoffs last year where they just fell short to Boreham Wood. And they're back up there again now. It was sort of at this 30-game mark last season when they got into the top seven and stayed there, and they've just broken into the playoffs again at the same stage. So, yeah, good to chat with Pete Wild, who's sort of very much sort of still finding his feet in management, coming up to 100 games now, but, you know, definitely a manager who's sort of forward-thinking and has a lot of bright ideas. And you sort of, when you speak to him, you kind of almost want to be playing for him yourself, no matter how sort of slow or bad you might be. It's sort of the type of person you'd quite like to work for, really. So, yeah, good to chat with him. And like I say, there's plenty of other bits in there on Sunday as well. It's another 32-page edition. So along with the usual match reports, there's plenty of little news lines and features in there as well.
So although we haven't got the full non-league season going on, we've got plenty of non-league news, non-league action, non-league views and opinion to pick up every weekend in the non-league paper on your Sunday morning. David, thank you once again for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. We'll speak to you again soon.
Thanks, Tim. Speak soon.
So that's it for this week. Thank you to all of our guests and for everybody for listening, wherever you may be. Don't forget you can follow us throughout the season, join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show. I'm there at Tim Fuel. You can, of course, find us every week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, via our smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites. Take a look there too for the non-league gaffer tapes. There may be an opportunity for maybe the gaffer tapes to come back before Dave Anson Rhea comes back onto the Non-League Football Show. So keep an eye there. Stay alert, stay safe. Thank you and goodbye.
J-I-B-B-A-J-A-B-B-A.